Welcome to Season 5 of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Joris Peels and Brent Wright. We're bringing in industry experts, patients, vendors, and thought leaders to share their stories, insights, and visions for the future. Whether you're a clinician, a researcher, a vendor, or someone with a personal interest in the field, we have something for you. Join us as we delve into how advancements in personalized healthcare and 3D printing are revolutionizing the industry and changing the way we approach the design, production, and delivery of prosthetic and orthotic devices.
Hi, everyone. My name is Joris Peels, and this is another edition of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright. How you doing, Brent?
Hey, Joris. I'm RV camping in Florida. It's blazing hot. I'm actually outside with a towel over my head and my computer, just so it doesn't shut down.
Okay, all right. Watch out.
It's a sight to behold. That's right. All right, man. Okay, I do have a question for you, Joris, because you've been around a long, long time in the 3D printing realm. And I actually put a poll up this week on my LinkedIn. On a very frequent basis, people will reach out to me and say, hey, can I get an STL or can I get that file or workflow? What would you say to somebody that requests that? And a lot of times these are, you know, random requests, people that I don't know. Don't know anything about. And, you know, a lot of the times they're asking for stuff that I've spent sometimes years developing. And what would you say to something like that?
Like from your perspective or?
Yeah, from my perspective or even from your perspective. You might be like, hey, Brent, you are like super greedy. Share the wealth. Or is it, hey, you know, you've worked hard for this. Let's figure out how to, I don't want to say monetize, but like, how to make sure people get the value, I get the value, they get the value out of something like that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because there's a lot of stuff that, this is information asymmetry in our market, where there's a lot of stuff that new people don't know is valuable and old timers would say know is valuable because they've struggled with it. So a lot of times the people don't really understand the value. They think it's much more like you're teaching them how to print, you know, go to control P in a, in like on a Windows or in a Mac, you know. So they don't really understand that it's difficult. And a lot of people like traditionally will always like, you know, see this as kind of a very proprietary kind of thing because they kind of, you know, they had to bleed for it, let's say, or it cost them hundreds of hours. You know, I would recommend that you, you know, either look at it if you can monetize it or not, because it is a huge inefficiency in our market, you know, and if you can find a way to, for example, give a course for everyone how to do it or wrap it in just a really simple video that gets you popular or something, that's much more kind of, you know, the way I would recommend going forward. Because the other way, what we've seen happening is then just companies kind of making it in a proprietary kind of workflow that's swallowed up by them. But we've always had this perennial problem that everyone uses different tools. There's no real understanding of what the best tool is, right? And no one ever, you know, really knows what happens in these workflows, right? Because that's another thing we have to talk about is in these workflows, if you don't do it right, you might take something from centimeters and take it into inches or do all sorts of stupid stuff to it. So it could actually cause a lot of errors, right? So I don't know. It's a kind of an opinion thing. I think, you know, if you could teach people and have them like you for it, I think that's always a good opinion. You know, write a book, do a course, do something like that with it. That's what I would recommend you do because it is immensely valuable. Like to keep it for yourself is kind of weird because, you know, what value is it beyond your own workflow, you know?
Yeah. You know what? I think that this may birth a new segment called Wisdom with Joris. Yeah. What do you think?
Oh, goodness. We can do that if you want, but it sounds a bit pretentious to be honest.
Oh, man. Oh, well, cool. No, that's good insight, though. And I think from like the heart is I want people to adopt this digital technology, and I think it's important. And so how do we make that happen? And then, you know, a lot of the feedback that I got from that was like, hey, if you teach somebody how to do something, that's going to be way better than just providing them a file that they don't know what to do with.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also your time. I think there's also an asymmetry that I've noticed that there's lots of people that have called me to pick my brain or, hey, want to know something, you know? And there's a group of these people that give back either to me or also just to the industry. As you know, it's wonderful to see somebody you've helped in the beginning all of a sudden start teaching other people or helping other people. But there's also people that only take, right? And they never give back, not to you, not to the community, not to anyone.
Yeah.
And so these kind of non-cooperative people, it kind of hurts you to help them because it takes you time and you never get anything back. The world doesn't get anything back. And it's kind of like a dead end.
Yeah.
And, I wouldn't mind like, you know, try and make an ebook out of it or something like $10 for the, you know, the workflows in orthopedics, orthotics, ebook, something like that. I think something simple. Yeah. It's also easier for you because it saves you a ton of time because you just point them to the ebook, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
All right. We are going to take a brief moment to introduce our title sponsor of this season. Brent, who is the sponsor?
Yeah, Joris. A special thanks to Advanced 3D, specialists in 3D printed prostheses and human interfaces, using cutting edge technology, personalized solution, empowering independence, redefining the future. Visit www.dv3dinc.com. Advanced 3D, changing lives, empowering possibilities.
Well, Brent, thank you for sponsoring us. Who do we have on the show today?
Oh, man. Well, I'm excited about this. We have Bart Rajewski from Poland. He started a company called V-Bionic, and he uses additive manufacturing to do a lot of upper extremity stuff, but he has started to dabble into the lower extremity custom liners, which we've talked about before. He uses a lot of FDM. I've actually put a couple of his things on our patients, and I've always been impressed with what he's done. So I'm really excited for him to kind of share his journey of V-Bionics, specifically upper extremity. And then, you know, he's kind of in this startup tech world as well. They're doing some app stuff and some other prosthetic and orthotic stuff. So I think that's pretty neat.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, Bart. Welcome, Bart.
Hi. Hello, guys. Thank you for having me today. I'm pretty excited.
Okay. Yeah, cool one. It's good to have you here today with us. So first off, how did you get involved with OMP?
Yes. Well, my background is engineering. I am a born engineer, basically. So a little bit different probably to other guys who are involved in this field. And I was a programmer, a software developer for a lot of time, but also service administrator and stuff like this. And at some point, I felt that software is something that you cannot touch and it's invisible. The projects that I made were rather invisible, and I wanted to get involved in something physical. That was my personal reason why I searched for things that I could start doing. And there was, and it's a nice, it has a connection to your introductory discussion about the STL files and sharing them, because I found you may know it. There was a great open source project by a team called Exi from Japan, and a guy Genta Kondo, these guys created a robotic hand powered by servos, and I get involved into that project by making that hand smaller. So I put my engineering skills and knowledge to make it smaller. And I started working, well, collaborating a little bit with them as well. And then I had this feeling that, well, this field is quite interesting. And there is a lot of technical space to go on and try to do new things. And I started pitching, I just wanted to become a startup and deliver a new type of robotic hand. I had this technical goal to make a robotic hand that is more dexterous than the ones that we had on the market. And there was, I remember one slide on my presentation that is, I still feel that it is quite important. Like, we can land on Mars and fly to Mars, but still we cannot provide artificial limbs to everyone, like on Earth, right? That was something that was important to me, and I wanted to get involved to maybe change that a little bit, and just be part of the group of people who are in this field. So this is how it started from me personally. Then the idea happened to be interesting also for investors. And we started as a startup. I mean, I say we, because right now there is 8 of us. So I'm not a single entrepreneur. We're rather a group of people right here. I have 2 PhDs on board and biomedical engineers as well, graphic designers and industrial designers, and just great people who have a lot of skills. And we work together to create new products. This is our main goal. We are not here to just to deliver what's already on the market, but we rather want to challenge the market or a little bit disrupt it, so that we could proceed in this field. So this is the main goal of WeBionic, basically.
And so. Essentially, because the human hand thing, that's a really tough challenge, right? That's something that is really, really hard to do.
It is. It really is. I must say that I was wrong multiple times, and hand is extremely difficult part of the body to copy. And you can see that when you look at humanoid robots from Toyota or Boston Dynamics as well. All the artificial hands there, these are still not very human-like. And if you see a very human-like hand, there is a huge compressor behind that, so you cannot fit that to a person. So because I didn't say that, but we did develop a very dexterous hand that has 11 degrees of freedom, and we have it. The problem is that you always, creating such a hand, you won't find the best one. You are searching for optimum one. So because there are some requirements that you have to meet, but all of them are contrary one to the other. Like it has to be fast, light, shouldn't take a lot of energy, should be durable, should not produce heat. And this is simply for me right now, after quite a lot of few years of development and research, it's more about searching for some optimum rather than maximum, because we're still limited by physics in this field. So right now we introduce our ToolCup Pro. So it is a bionic robotic hand. And we think that we put the optimum into that. This is what we feel. It is not the most... we don't have that many fingers actuated, because 2 of the fingers are actuated with motors. But we think this is something optimum, having all these constraints and all these features that are required, but not easy to meet in one product, in one device.
So there's balancing. This is really kind of interesting, because there's, partially in a lot of prosthetics is the case, right? But especially in something complex of the hand, it's just ultimate. You can get it to be fast, but then it's not going to be durable, for example, or it's going to use battery too much. And where are you then focusing your cues on? What are you saying is the most important thing? This dexterity, or the battery life, or the comfort? What are the important things that you work towards?
It is a very difficult question, because it really depends on who's going to judge? Is it the client? Is it the investor? Is it the media? Is it the industry? And I don't have an easy answer for that, because from the client's point of view, what they basically want is their hand back. So of course, huge dexterity would be very beneficial. This is what my initial idea was: let's make the hand very, very dexterous. But then the next problem you see is, how are you going to control it? You do have a very dexterous hand, but my electrical controllers allow you for 2 signals. Well, of course, we do have the new ones, you can try to teach them with AI, et cetera, but still, it's the access to these devices is limited. I mean globally, and is it like it's probably what we have and it's advanced, okay, but is it does it bring the hand back? To some maybe, to others no. Of course, it depends on the amputation, on the state of muscles, on rehabilitation, on the fitness of the hand, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the point of view of the client, of the patient. From the investment point of view, it has to be, of course, great profit margin and a large scale and a possibility to scale it and deliver globally. Well, I don't have an easy answer, and I don't think we don't develop the hand that we had, and we have the very dexterous one, and we are not going to make it a product because honestly, it's super advanced from technical point of view. And it would probably break within weeks when we would fit it to the patient. And we wouldn't be able to service that. And that was the reason why we went for something more optimal, which is limited in terms of technology, more limited. But we are sure that we can give it safely to the patient and if required, we can service that easily, more easily than the one we had before. Yes, so it's not easy. The hand is very tricky, but we basically are involved in upper limb extremity. Yes, this is what we do because, yes, we focus on upper limbs.
Interesting, Bart, that what you do, though, is you pay specific attention to the cosmesis or the way the prosthesis looks,
right.
Almost above function. I mean, your stuff is very functional, but you make these things look and feel good. Can you just share a little bit to our audience on why you have found that to be very important?
Well, yes, this feature comes directly from clients, because with our experience, they do want the hand to look natural. Of course, we can advertise the hand that is not looking natural, that it's still okay, but this is what they told us and what is very obvious to us. They want the hand to look natural. So we started developing and working on prosthetic gloves, because we, of course, there are gloves that are off the shelf. You can buy them. There are some problems with them with delivery and time you can get one, and these gloves are also limited in terms of sizes, skin tones, etc. So we wanted to have something that we could make a lot faster, and that could fit our designs, because our designs just like in every developing company were changing rapidly. We had to have something that we can just have right away or within a week. So yes, this is probably one of our greatest assets. We can 3D print silicone details and have them very quickly. And all these details can come from 3D models. We tried ears, we tried nose, and we can just, of course, it started with prosthetic gloves. And it was a huge problem for us, honestly. I think we wouldn't be able to have Tolka prosthesis if we wouldn't develop that technology that we probably can offer us also in other fields and in other solutions different to upper limbs only. Just like you mentioned, the lower limb liners comes exactly from this idea that we have a technology that we created for upper limb. Let's try to deliver it also elsewhere.
So talk to me about this silicone 3D printing stuff. How does it work?
Well, I will be totally honest with you. I'm not very willing to share the technical matters about that. All I can say is that You know, I've been building printers for a long time. I've built my first 3D printers like 8 years ago, I guess. It was from the open source project, Eventorbot, it was called. It was not very successful, but it did print. So that was my first 3D printer. Me as an engineer, I worked, I've been creating 3D printers as well. So I put my skills basically also to in this field. So, but in the end, we do have ability to have the silicon models out of 3D, silicon products out of 3D models and have them fast. Well, yeah, that's just part of our, you know, asset. And I know it's quite interesting.
It could be a very valuable thing for a lot of people, especially in our neck of the woods, what we're talking about, liners and all these other things, but also just as a standalone thing could be really valuable as well. But okay, so what other products do you have besides just the hand? What other things do you make?
Well, we are focused on the upper limb. So we have that we call the hand Tolka. So it's like globally easy word to remember. And we have three variants of it. It's very basic one. So it's basically cosmetic glove with the infill. It's TPU 3D printed infill and our glove. It's just a cosmetic thing where you can select the color, of course, of the glove. Then we have, this is Tolka Basic. Then we have Tolka, which also has fingers that you can adjust and set the way you want. I guess Brent mentioned that because he already had that and fit the patient with it. So he knows how that works and how it is. It also, because I also had an idea. So if we want to progress and give something more to the industry, then we probably have to give a little bit more than is available and reduce the price a little bit. This is how I see the progress, basically. So I wanted to make it a cosmetic, to upgrade the cosmetic prosthesis. This is how Tolka was created. So we can, so the person that has it, can not only, it doesn't only look well, but can give some basic functionality. And just today I fit one person with Tolka, and he suddenly took a pen and wanted to write something right away. And he was very happy because he could. And this person has both hands amputated, unfortunately. So he can hold the paper with one hand and write with the other. This is something he couldn't do until today. So you can feel the patient that is satisfied and see how that works. And this is something very rewarding in this industry and in this field. And this is something, well, you know, you are doing the right job. So he just set the fingers, put the pen in, and could suddenly write something. So this is the feature that gives our this is our basic product, Tolka. Then we also have the Tolka Pro, which is the bionic hand. Bionic meaning controlled by the body, with myo control, very classical one. But also we introduced voice control. And I've been asking people about what they think about it. And Brent was the one that I was also asking him about that. Not everyone is very into this type of control, but my idea about voice control, it comes from the research that we did, because we had this very dexterous hand and we needed not 10, 12 or even 20 gestures. We needed unlimited gestures because we could set the angle of each finger of each joint. So you really require a lot more than any limited to, I don't know, 1,000 of commands. And voice gives you this possibility because you can say a yellow cup and you can say a blue cup, and both these commands can set all joints to some preset position, different from each other, and simply give that. It makes, I don't argue that this is the best way to control the prosthesis, because you miss this bionic feeling that you can have from muscles. I agree, but on the other hand, you gain a lot more options, right? You get a lot more possibilities with that. So this is Tolka Pro. Then we have liners, and liners come from upper and lower extremity as well, because in some cases it's good to make a longer liner for upper limb as well, to fit it better and suspend it better. All of them are from 3D models. So the process is that we get the STL file that the technician can design whatever he she wants. Some cushions can be added, and the design is totally up to the person who prepares that. And then within days, we just deliver it made in silicone and, well, with the color the person wants. So this is something that could be interesting. Yes, and it works, basically. And we have quite a good feedback about liners. And also we, for our own internal reasons, we worked on 3D scanning software with the iPhone, because iPhones do have correct sensors that allow us for 3D scanning. It's not easy. It's not, you have to pay attention to do it correctly, but the app that we created, it's called AutoScan. It works for us, and we decided to publish it publicly, so everyone can have a try. There is a manual there, multiple languages available. Well, this is not something we want to get profit from. It's more that we wanted to have our solution in this field, and when we have it, why wouldn't we share that? So if you're somewhere where access to 3D scanners is very limited, and you want to try, it is available. Unfortunately, it's available for iPhones only due to the sensors that it has. So there is a requirement. And that the reason why we created that is, of course, not to step into the German market with this, but we cooperate and work together with prosthetic technician in northern Syria, for instance. We recently scanned it wasn't us, but a person scanned a soldier in Ukraine. We have it opens up new possibilities for getting 3D scans, 3D models, where 3D scanners are not available, but iPhones are. This is something that we would like to make more popular, because in longer term, it would give us more clients. But still, it requires some skills and knowledge how to prepare the scan and do it, because not every scan would be perfect, but when it's done correctly, then we have a great scan and we can proceed, and we have some success stories with that as well.
Okay, that's very interesting. I think, but okay, so the first thing is, like, you start off with this challenge, it's making a robot in her hand, and then, which is challenging enough, then you make a silicone 3D printer, then you're going to make this app. This is engineer's curiosity, right? Here, there, and there. And I think it's really exciting, but does it also maybe... Do you think this adds to the complete product, or do you think it could also be distracting because you'd be busy with all these things apart from your actual products?
What you see in our journey here is also a track of mistakes, because we did make a mistake in assumptions with the very robotic and dexterous hands, I have to admit. But then we just observed that we are lacking some parts of puzzles to make the product available and in the end reach our goal. Because from our startup point of view and our startup vision, we are not going to multiply the solutions that are already on the market. Our only way to be successful is to deliver something disruptive and new. So if we want to step into that field, we need to create new technology and new things. And the last years, yes, we were very involved in R&D. We were basically an R&D company that was developing things. And I'm pretty happy that right now we can offer what we have and combine and offer products, create products, and be more focused on sales, because I'm confident that we can, because we're doing it and it's ready. But I totally agree that it was kind of risky to go that deep and create so many different things. But right now, I believe we have a closed ecosystem that allows us for creating something totally in a new way and interesting way. And maybe also from a business perspective, I believe new things are possible and new ways to for also other technicians to cooperate with us in a new way. But it is a new way, because we are sometimes asked, I was asked about investors and on multiple meetings, where are all the clinics that you cooperate with? Show me the list of clinics that are interested in cooperation. And well, my answer was that we would, of course, cooperate and want to work with them. But when I start to discuss things, it seems we don't have the same approach like others do, and we are trying to operate things a little bit differently. You know, also with the 3D printing, it's for me, it's obvious that it should be used. It's beneficial. It's not that obvious everywhere, and it's rather. You know, so some companies are ready to accept new members, but let's do it the way it's always been done. And we have a little bit different approach, I believe.
Yeah. I think first of all, I think it's really refreshing that you're like, we made mistakes. It's wonderful to hear that, because we, you know, everybody who's in a startup environment knows you screw up a lot. You know, you fail way faster than bigger companies. That's part of the charm, first off. And that's also part of building an effective business, the ability to risk things and do new things. So I think it's refreshing. And it's also really interesting that you're saying, you know, we're having issues with product market fit and just trying to explain ourselves well to other people and trying to get them to understand their value proposition. I think so many people think, I am going to invent this magical thing and ta-da, the world will buy it, you know? But oftentimes it's very much in like, who are you selling this thing to and what benefit is it to them? And what kind of switching costs are? And I think a lot of startups have struggled with this product market fit stuff.
Well, yes. Right now, we expand our sales in Poland. I wanted to go global right away, and I just, like you see, I do have some international connections, because I wouldn't be here today. And Brent did have our product and can just say how it works and how it is. But right now we're focused on sales in Poland, but also, because I didn't say that, we can deliver products remotely. I mean, only upper limb, because I know it makes a lot of emotions. We are not going to fit anyone with lower limb remotely, but I do believe upper limb can be fit remotely, and I can take responsibility for that. We don't have any clients complaining about our service or anything that happened to them. And this is something new. We do have some clients that we have never even seen in person, really. I know that a lot of people in the industry would not agree with this approach. And I wouldn't agree with the lower limb as well. But after 7 years of our development, of our research, after, you know, we work on MRI scans to create sockets as well, we have some skilled and prosthetic technicians as well here who made a lot of sockets. And we have patients in the end, that clients that say that it's all okay. I can state that we can do that safely, and we do it. We do it in Poland. We do it for Syria. We're doing it right now for Ukraine. It's only one patient at the moment that we have in process. It is different, But you know that my question, I ask myself a question: how is it all going to look like in 5-10 years? Like looking at the industry, not only this industry, but all other industries. Will we start creating products that are not connected with geographically connected with the place where you're present? We will. I'm totally sure about that. So this will happen in this field as well. Sooner or later, just imagine that, you know, the big players find it interesting and start doing that. Probably they would have some business problems to do that because due to, you know, static costs that they have in all the clinics that they invested in. So that may be a blocker and to stop into not doing it. But I am 100% sure that this will happen sooner or later. So we will deliver products remotely, not only prosthesis, but we, you know, the IKEA is doing some chairs that are fit to your back. You can already buy some of them in Denmark, I guess. 3D printed, of course, because 3D printing is essential here. It's without it, we wouldn't be able to do that. So we can do things that in our local companies that used to be done in some big factories some time ago. Now it's faster, easier, and doable. We see it every day. And I think that as long as we keep in mind that it has to be beneficial for clients, safe, and reasonable, and give value that they really express that it is a value to them, it's okay to progress this way. That's my statement about this and the approach that I have. And, you know, I'm pretty
open. That's very interesting. I think starting with the endpoint and working your way backwards, yeah, it's kind of clear that you have to at least think about this because. And we keep talking about this every single time. We keep coming back to the idea, like, surely someone's going to figure a way to do this in India or in Vietnam. And I think that's the reality. And you have to prepare for that competitive kind of landscape, I think. But so, Bart, a little bit, like, talk to us a little bit about this MRI sockets thing. Why would you use MRIs to make sockets? And, you know, what is it? What advantages come from that?
Yes, well... We have little chance to get into markets that are very well grown. Like we won't be able to be present in Germany, France, because the market there is very well set. It's grown. There are big players there. But there is still, and that was my startup idea, right? So, and we see it from time to time that 80% of the planet is not served by professionals in terms of also prosthetics and orthotics because they simply do not have access to professionals. So to do that, part of it is this remote delivery idea. Part of it is a remote possibility to 3D scan. And part of it was also to be able to create prosthetic sockets right away automated from MRI scans. This is something I know that sounds ridiculous, impossible, and it's super difficult. And we worked on it, and this project was supported by Polish government as well from the research fund. We worked on that for over 2 years. And we have some results where you go to for MRI scan, which produces Nikon. Nikon files, and we have the pipeline of automated pipeline that in the end you receive a 3D printed, 3D model that you can 3D print, and the model fits the patient. I wouldn't say it, it is, in the end, we realize that in the end, you do have to have some adjustments to that. It's not fully automated, like totally automated, that you just go for the scan and you have the socket and it fits. But we defined and found the areas, the points that require adjustment, just like you see in multiple software that is already available. But what it does is you could possibly have that plan, like in some countries where there is MRI scan available, and you could deliver to these people prosthetic sockets, if not fully automatic, then semi-automatic way. And this opens up also new possibilities. And this is something we wanted to develop and challenge as well. I know there are great guys in Medics Sans Frontières who work in Jordan. They already do work in this field. I know there are some African projects as well. But at the end, this is not massive. This is not massive. That was our engineering challenge to make it more available to others and try it. But just like you mentioned, we are challenging ourselves from a technical point of view. We are engineers. We are looking to implement technical solutions that are available elsewhere for the benefit of the field that we are focused on.
Bart, when I hear you say some of the stuff that you're working on, you know, some of it's very, very interesting, and definitely not traditional in the sense of, you know, what I know as a certified prosthetist, you know, and some people may consider me a stick in the mud as far as I've been around for a little while. I don't necessarily say that I'm set in my ways, but I've been around enough to see technology come and go. And I just wonder from your perspective on, you know, what you know about prosthetists, orthotists, what you see on social media and such, from an engineering perspective, even from a startup perspective, you know, what would you say to somebody like me that is kind of stuck in their ways, giving me feedback on like, hey, there may be some options that you don't know about, and it's good to have an open mind. What would you say to somebody like me?
I think it's not our idea and our approach is not that we will not and don't want to exchange and say that what's been done and how it works is bad, because it's not. It's simply not. It will work the way it works. The classical ways of production and fabrication will work, and these are all totally okay. It's just that we and our background, we started with 3D printing. There was nothing before that in our case. So we are into that. My team have never done a socket that is fabricated in a classical way, because we are not professional in that. We don't know how to do that, honestly. We know how to do that we have the knowledge how that's been done, but we started with 3D printing. We never did it in a different way. This is the reason why we are challenging ourselves to find new ways. And I think we are innovative in what we do, but it doesn't mean that all we have and all that works is something bad, especially when you look at the different markets that we have. I don't even know that our office is located 300 kilometers from Berlin, but I'm not really interested in entering the German market, because I know there is absolutely no space for me there, because it works there. It works in terms of products available. It works in terms of reimbursement that's available there, companies that are there. And in the end, their German patients are satisfied with what they have, and they cannot probably get another 50% of satisfaction with our new approach. But on the other hand, just like we said, or just like I mentioned, we still have a lot of people in multiple countries. We have the Middle East, we have, you know, Africa. These people have no access, or really, this is not an empty word. They don't have access, and they have no ways to get prostheses. You know, I had some talks and discussions. Of course, money is always a problem. There is a huge demand in India, a very, very big and growing country, and I guess also the market. There's been a huge disaster and earthquake in Turkey. There is a lot to be done. You know, I think people are there. We just don't reach them. well enough in terms of products, but as well as financing funds and you know, in the end, solving the problem that my startup was about to solve. So reaching people who have little or no access with new approach in terms of technology, using all the technology and knowledge that we have as engineers. That was the that was our start, and this is still our value and strategy and idea.
Would you say that? So, I mean, from what you're saying, especially like around the access and such, it sounds like one of the biggest holes to plug is this idea of education around the field of prosthetics and orthotics and potentially the, you know, the job of being a prosthetist orthotist. But with your technology, it sounds like with kind of these, if you have willing hands and feet on the ground tied with technology, the world becomes a little bit more flat and accessible. Is that a fair statement, or am I off on that?
Yes, exactly. It is. You know, we also have some global challenges everywhere. Like, I don't know if it's visible in the US, but in Poland, not too many people want to step into this field in a classical way and start learning that. You know, people have so many ways to you know, for their career that they are usually are trying to find something different. It is not an easy occupation and work, isn't it? So it's not only in prosthetics field, but there is a lot of interest in automation. This is one way. I don't say this is possible. It is possible to automate it, but to find solutions that would fit also youngsters and young people who could step into that field. You know, it's because I do know it. It's totally different in Poland in terms of certification and in terms of who works in this field. It doesn't mean that we have less, worse service here, but it works. It simply works differently. Not too many people want to get involved in that. So maybe the solution is to, you know, to spread the availability, having, we already have central fabrication in terms of fabrication, right? It comes from certified prosthetists, but then there is one place that produces their designs. Well, the next step would probably be that we would spread it also in terms of, meeting the patient, or the patient would meet him herself. And I don't think, again, I don't think it is France, Germany, the US. I think it is Middle East, Africa, it is India, it is probably South America, etc., etc. There are people there who still could benefit from technology and from fitting and having prostheses.
Yeah, I think so. It's really cool. There's a lot of examples how, for example, the mobile phone is super empowering, where over a billion people in relatively poor countries got that phone and all of a sudden had much more access to information, much more access to trade things, to find out about things, to be in touch with family, that kind of stuff, and how they can then, you know, things like, there's like mobile wallet payments. A lot of people, these people are unbanked, but now all of a sudden they have a phone and they have like things like, it's called M-Pesa and stuff like this. Things like these can make all of a sudden, they all of a sudden can do digital payments, right? Across an entire country's entire continent. So there is like a, you know, there are examples of this happening where, you know, technology can help leapfrog and inspire people. And I think that's a really good, you know, that's a really good portent for what you guys are doing as well.
Yes. Well, to make it clear, it's not that we don't work and do not cooperate with other technicians, because we do. And we are, you know, every technician is very welcome to work with us, because we do have solution for this type of cooperation. It's just that in our strategy, we also do have this idea of doing things remotely. And well, it is a bold statement, I know, but I think this is simply going to happen in this or the other way. There is a problem of money, of course, because we can say, and I do know that there is a lot of patients in Middle East, a lot of patients in Southern Turkey right now, isn't it? Because there was a huge disaster there. But it doesn't mean that we have a financial solution to fit them with prostheses. Even if you create a project there and find funds like a NGO fund, the demand is still higher than what you can provide there, unfortunately.
I think there's a ways around this as well. I mean, I think if you look at the mobile phone example as well, that went to millionaires, then it went to policemen and stuff like this. Then it went to business people. And then as it, you know, the cost came down by selling to the most advanced users. And that kind of same mechanism hasn't really been happening for prosthetics. It's kind of like because a lot of things are manual labor and the reimbursement and stuff is really inefficient. But you know, that something like that could happen. Or yeah, you could do more. I'm a huge fan of Prahlad's The Fortune of the Bottom of the Pyramid. Yet there is a market. And if you can find out a way to make it radically cheaper, then maybe, yeah, you could unlock that market and make a lot of money that way rather than rely on grants and things like that.
Well, that is a problem because I know that the possible financial possibilities of, you know, people in India or Africa, and unfortunately, this is way below what we could accept as a company to offer our product, unfortunately, at the moment. But you know, our core comes from engineering. And I really believe that engineering and technologies should benefit us. We should get what's possible from technology. And engineers, this is their mission to deliver things that improve our lives, right? So this is why we focus on that. And really, we are stubborn in searching for ways to prevail. And it is a mixed business model because we have to incorporate the classical one. But also, you know, we should be disruptive because otherwise nothing would change, honestly. So if we want to change something, then, you know, I have to be bold and state what I say.
Okay, thanks, John. But there's also a lot of hope there to kind of like sell into this growing market and sell into the kind of, you know, to sell into this market. And you know, I think one of my favorite things is to look at these successful things in microcomputing and stuff like that. And there are, you know, for example, groups in developing countries with much higher incomes that want access to these things as well. So there's a way to do a multi-step kind of thing. But I do think what you guys are doing is absolutely fantastic. I think, and then also I think there are, you know, you say all the time that you don't want to focus on Germany and stuff like this, but I think your hands, for example, these silicone hands that you guys are doing are absolutely spectacular. I mean, I think that's something that maybe, you know, you could find a market for in across Europe or in other countries as well.
Well, yes, maybe probably when we grow a little bit, that could be possible. I just know how much investment it requires to be present in Germany and just start being present there. Because you have to build a relationship with all these people there. And honestly, there is a company that is, you know, ruling this market. So, and it's big. So I don't know, maybe we could, at the moment it is very nice because this is also a part of my idea. It was part of my idea so that we could create a product that is good enough and looks well enough to be noticed and be, you know, maybe even offered in more demanding markets. Like, hey, why don't we have it here this way? So maybe we could go from Poland to Turkey and then back to Germany because, you know, why don't we have it here? But let's be honest, Germans, basically, they do have great companies and they do have great products and, you know, it just works there. But on the other hand, you won't see clinics in countries that are not, that don't have the potential to be financially and profitable enough in a classical model where you go to the country, create a clinic, build one, invite patients and serve them. And this is why we don't see clinics. And then we say that, well, a lot of people, 80% of people on this planet don't have access to prosthetic technicians. Well, because it's not very profitable to create a prosthetic clinic everywhere, right? Because it wouldn't be sustainable. So it's not available and it's not present. That's pretty easy.
Well, I think it's absolutely fantastic what you're doing, Bart. I think it's really exciting to see. I'm going to totally try out your app to scan my feet and stuff. And I think the hands look amazing, and also the liners also look really great. And I hope you guys really get to build out the technology some more, because I think there's really very disruptive stuff there. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me and this interesting in discussion.
And Brent, thank you for being here today as well.
Oh, this was great. And Bart, thank you for sharing your story. I know our listeners will hopefully hop on your website and take a look. It really is very neat, and how you're using technology to reach really the 100% of people that need it, or the dream is to reach 100% of the people that need it is really neat. So yes, thank you for coming on, sharing your insight. And I hope our listeners, and I know they will, take something away from it today. I also wanted to remind everybody that this episode is also brought to you by GesPodo, and that's GesPodo. GesPodo is an amazing automation software for the orthotic and prosthetic industry. Well, orthotic industry for the time being. Right now, it does an amazing job automating your foot orthosis workflow, but you should see under the hood with the AFO workflows coming out very soon. I'm very, very excited. So check out GesPodo at gespodo.com and let me know if you have any questions about it. Joris, take it from here.
Yeah, this is another episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Bright and Joris Peels, and we really hope you enjoyed this today. Have a great day.